Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. And we'll start in verse 10. The disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered and said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see even not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn so that I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear.'" I'm sure y'all all know that I'm a pretty big fan of the movies. I don't like movies as much as I used to. They're just not as good anymore. But I really enjoy all those old movies and stuff. And one of my favorite movies is Ben-Hur. It's an acquired taste. People don't like Ben-Hur. You know, it's a long movie. Charlton Heston is not the greatest actor in the world, regardless of what anybody says, but he did a good job in the movie. And I'll just quick, since y'all have taken my time, I'm going to take some more of yours. Just a piece of trivia for you. Y'all know who Leslie Nielsen is. He was in the airplane movies and all that. Leslie Nielsen was actually considered for the role of Marcellus, Ben-Hur's friend. That would have been very different, wouldn't it? And surely you can't be serious, Ben-Hur. Yes, I am, and don't call me Shirley. But anyway, I like Ben-Hur. And there's an interesting scene that takes place at the beginning of Ben-Hur, after Ben-Hur has been accused of assassinating or trying to assassinate the procurator of Jerusalem. He and his mother and his sister are thrown in a dungeon, and he's sentenced to go to the galleys. They're dragging him through the desert to go to the galleys, and that's how they treated prisoners back then. And in one scene, they come into this little village, and as they're coming in the village, the camera is set up in this carpenter shop, and as it follows them through the window, you see these hands sawing, and obviously that's Jesus in the carpenter shop. They stop in that little town, and the head of the group, the head of the guard says, "Rest, or water break. You know, give the soldiers water first, and then give the prisoners water." And at one point he says, "But not him," and he points to Ben-Hur, because he's been given orders not to give him any special treatment. So Ben-Hur is just obviously just as thirsty as he could possibly be, and the guard stands in front of him and drinks out of the water gourd or whatever it is, and then he just kind of spills stuff, and Ben-Hur is trying to just sip the water out of the sand. He's so famished. And then suddenly what happens is the shadow comes over him. And a man leans down. You never see the man's face, but he leans down and he gives him some water and he pours water over his head. And it's obviously Jesus, who has seen all this happening in the carpenter shop and has come out. Now, by the way, they don't show the face of Jesus in this entire movie, and that's because back then they didn't show Jesus' face, because no one knew what it looked like. But now we know it looks like Willem Dafoe or whomever. But anyway, at that point, the head of the guard sees what's happening, and he comes over and he says, "Hey, you, I told you." And at that point, Jesus stands up, and everything's shot from behind Jesus. And all you see is this guard. This guard should have won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, because he goes from complete and total hate in his eyes, and his face just changes, because now he's looking into the eyes of Jesus. And now he's looking into the eyes of pure love, and he can't stand it. And at one point he just kind of does this, and then he looks back up again, and then he does this, and he doesn't say another word and turns around and walks away and lets Jesus do what Jesus was going to do. The old saying is that the eyes are the window of the soul. And I know it's just a movie, but you can imagine the soul that guard must have seen when he looked into the eyes of Jesus. Last week we talked about the hands of Jesus, as you may recall. We talked about the fact that the hands of Jesus are strong. The hands of Jesus are tender. They are available, and they are able to guide us as we go along. As I said then, of course, we don't know what his hands look like. We have no, I know they weren't like mine, you know. I said that last week. Mine are just, I don't do a lot of manual labor. My fingertips are, you know, worn from typing on a keyboard. And then my hand does this, you know, from the mouse. But other than that, we don't know what Jesus' hands look like. Well, you know what? We don't know what his eyes look like either. We don't know what color his eyes were. We can surmise, but we don't know what color they were. We don't know what shape they were. But we do get an idea from the scriptures of how Jesus used his eyes. And that's what I wanted to explore a little bit this morning, about Jesus seeing and what Jesus saw and how he saw. And to begin with, we can readily see, if you will pardon the expression, readily see, you see, that Jesus used his eyes to search. Jesus used his eyes to search. Listen to this passage, Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. He entered the synagogue again, and a man was there that who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Step forward." Then he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they kept silent. And when he had looked around them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored, as whole as the other. Jesus observed this man. He saw that this man had the withered hand. And then he challenged the people around him to examine what was going on. He searched their faces after he asked them that question. Do you believe that it's better, that it's okay to heal on the Sabbath? And I'm sure that he went from one person to the next, 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 and looked them dead in the eye. And you know what his reaction was? He was angered because of the hardness of their hearts. He searched their eyes. He searched their hearts. I wonder how many of them averted their eyes when Jesus looked at them. Jesus was angered at the hardness of their hearts as he observed what they were doing. They were more concerned with traditions than they were with what they needed to do as part of God's family. Listen to this one, Mark chapter 5, verses 30 through 32, just a couple of chapters later. Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done this thing. This is the story, of course, about the woman who had the issue of blood, and she'd had that for 12 years of her life. She had spent all of her money, and no one had been able to make her better. And I'm sure she spent a lot of hours in prayer. "God, please heal me. Please help me." 12 years. And then God answered her prayer. Jesus walked by. "If I can just touch the hem of his garment, I can be healed." And so as Jesus comes by, you can almost see how this happens. She just looks around a little bit, and she just kind of reaches her hand out and touches the hem of the garment, and she's healed immediately. Healed immediately. And Jesus stops at that point, and he looks around and says, "Hey, who touched me?" And the disciples say, "Come on, Jesus, there are all kind of people around you. What do you mean, who touched you? How in the world are we going to know who touched you?" But he kept looking around. And you can see, you can think again, he might have gone from face to face, eyes to eyes to eyes, until finally he came to this woman. By the way, he knew who touched him. He had no problem knowing who touched him. But he went from eye to eye to eye to see who it was, and how they would react. Just like the Pharisees, he was looking to see how they would react. And this woman finally realized that the jig was up. Jesus knew who she was. She threw herself on the mercy of the court, if you will. She confessed to what she had done. And she said, "Have mercy on me." But she had already received the healing by her faith. Jesus searched to find the one who needed his tender words of forgiveness. And whether others thought it was hopeless or not, that's what he was searching for. That was because when Jesus found the woman, he observed her as well. He didn't just see her, he observed her. He was a keen observer as well as a searcher. Yogi Berra, that great philosopher, once said this, "You can see a lot just by looking." You know, it sounds kind of silly, but it is true, isn't it? You can see a lot just by looking. Jesus used his eyes to see what was going on around him, to observe things. In Mark chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, then they came to him bringing a paralytic who was carried by four men. And when they could not come near him because of the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was, so that when they had broken through, they let down the bed on which the paralytic was lying. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "Son, your sins are forgiven you." He saw a stretcher being being dropped down in front of him through the roof. He observed their faith. He observed how much faith they have. Here are some men who were so determined to get their friend to Jesus that they broke through the roof. Jesus observed this, and it was pleasing to him. His observation was that these men believed wholeheartedly in his ability to do something for their friend. And so because of their faith, their friend was healed. He observed what was going on. Here's another time that Jesus was a keen observer. In Luke chapter 21, verses 1 through 4, he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. So he said, "Truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all those out of their abundance have put in offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had." Jesus saw what was going on here at the treasury. He saw how the people were putting, he didn't just see them putting their money in, he saw how they were putting their money in. Number one, he could see into their hearts, but number two, he was a keen observer. He observed the clothing. He observed the manner in which they put their money in, and perhaps even the expressions on their faces. When he saw the widow and what she did, it was just too good a lesson for him to pass up. Look at this poor woman here putting in what she has. Now, obviously, as I said, Jesus could see into their hearts, but I think it's important to understand that he chose to comment on what was going on this particular day. It's the same with the cripple who was lowered down before him. These were people who were in certain circumstances, but who showed their faith in God. The men let the man down in front of Jesus. They broke open the roof. Can you imagine what that must have been like to break open that roof? That wasn't the easiest thing, I'm sure, to do in the world, but they did it. And they dropped this guy down. Now, you know, it's one thing to carry somebody. It's another thing to attach ropes to this stretcher and let him down through the roof. That's an entirely different thing. But they did it because Jesus can heal this man. And we can't get through the crowd, so we're going to put him right there in front of him. And this woman came to this treasury, and she put in her two mites. That's all she had to put in. And that's what she put in. These were object lessons that he wanted his disciples to see. He wanted them to observe. And I believe there was an even bigger lesson to learn. Instead of just looking at people, we need to learn how to see people. We need to learn how to observe those that we come in contact with. To learn to find out what's going on in their lives. To learn to find out just by what's going on how things are going with them. It's not because we want to pry, although, you know, I do like to pry. It's because you want to share the compassion of Jesus. You want to share the grace and the mercy of God with them. It's because you want to see them with the same eyes that Jesus sees them and to reach out to them with Jesus' hands. We can gather some strong lessons from the fact that Jesus used his eyes to search and observe. Now, you may think that I'm putting this fine line between search and observe, but you know what? There is a difference between the two things. We see a lot every day, don't we? But we don't always observe what we see. We just kind of pass it off. We don't even think about it. We don't observe it. We don't discern what we see. We don't see things for you. Have you ever driven past something and thought, I've never seen that before, and it's something that's been there for 30 years? You've just never observed that it was there until something was on your mind to make it click. That happens a lot of times. Well, Jesus says, you need to be focusing on these people. Now, when the searching is done, that's when the observing actually starts. Just as Jesus did with the woman with the issue of blood, we need to be searching for those who are searching for him. When we find them, we need to observe them. We need to discern. We need to observe their reactions. We need to observe their needs in their lives, spiritual as well as physical. I think that the one way to think about this can be that he thought, wait a minute, I got mixed up there, I'm sorry. Sometimes I do that when I look down here. I have these bifocals, and I don't always exactly see what I'm supposed to. I think that one way to think about it is that searching can, in a way, be thought of as sight. Observing can be thought of as focus. So think of it that way. Searching, it's sight. Observing is focus. When I got my real glasses, you know, before the bifocals, when I got my real glasses, I'll never forget, you know, we were going to campus at that time, and I got those glasses, and they put the songs up on the screen. It's like, whoa, they're not fuzzy. I just thought somebody didn't know how to put stuff up there. They weren't fuzzy anymore, and that's because everything was in focus. I could see. We need to be willing to search, but we also need to be willing to observe. We need to be able to focus on others and also focus on Jesus. And that's another way that Jesus really used his eyes, and that was to focus on the Father. In Mark chapter 6 and verse 41, when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them, and the 2 fish he divided among them all. John 11, 41 and 42, then he took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you will always hear me, but because of the people who are standing by, I said this that they may believe that you sent me. John 17 and verse 1, Jesus spoke these words, lifted up his eyes to heaven, and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may also glorify you. Jesus never took his eyes off of his Father. He came here to do his Father's will. He came here to focus on his Father's will. Everything he did to the glory of God. Have you ever wondered why the scriptures are so specific about Jesus looking up to the heavens? He lifted his eyes toward the heaven. I believe that the answer is simple. He wanted everyone there to know who he was focusing on. People saw his posture. People heard his words as he prayed. He didn't ask for anything for himself. He asked for things for others. And he asked the one who could grant those requests for him. As a matter of fact, if you continue reading in that passage in John chapter 17, verse 1 and following, you're going to find that that's Jesus' prayer in the garden, where he asked his Father to watch over all of those people who would be following him in the years to come, forever and ever. It was only God who could do this. His focus was on the Father. And his focus was on his Father's will. Jesus longed for his disciples, and he longs for each one of us to be able to see as he saw. Several times in Scripture, we hear the phrase, he saw and was moved with compassion. Matthew chapter 9, verses 36 through 38, but when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them because they were weary and scattered like sheep, having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Now I want you to think about that scene for just a moment. Jesus is standing before this multitude. Every conceivable level of person in that multitude, from the poorest to maybe the richest, they were all there. And he looked at them. And he didn't divide them into castes. He didn't divide them into levels of strata. He saw them all as people who needed him. He saw them all as people who needed God. He didn't place them into categories. He just said, all of these people need God. This is a field that's ripe to harvest. Don't look at them as, well, this is a rich guy, and this is a poor guy, and this is a guy who doesn't care, and this is a guy who does care. Don't look at them like that. Everybody needs Jesus. Everybody needs God. The harvest is plentiful. Look at this field. You know, you can look out at a field of wheat, and you can think it's a beautiful thing, and then somebody else looks at that field of wheat, and they see food, and somebody else sees something else. But it's there for us to take advantage of. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, is what Jesus said in the passage that I read at the beginning of this lesson. People did not understand the parables back then. Apparently some of the disciples didn't completely understand the parables because he had to explain them to them. They didn't understand what it was that Jesus was doing, and they didn't understand why Jesus was there. They were, in a sense, blind. They could look at Jesus. They could listen to his words. They could see him heal people, but it didn't mean anything unless they had somebody that needed to be healed. And then it meant something to them. Or if they needed to be healed, and then it meant something to them. But some of those people in that audience listened to Jesus. And some of those people went away changed. You know, we don't think about that, but multitudes of people were what Jesus saw. And some of his words had to touch those people, and they went away changed because Jesus cared about them. And he cared enough to tell them about the word. He cared enough to feed them. He cared enough about them to love them with the love of God, to focus on them. The apostles were to a certain extent at that point as well, being blind. They were more ready to judge those who came to seek the Lord sometimes, trying on several occasions to send people away. Remember last week we talked about the little children coming to Jesus? Send them away, Jesus. They're just getting in the way. They're just, you know, get rid of them. And Jesus said, suffer the little children to come to me. Of such is the kingdom of God made. And he took the time to bless those children one by one. What do you think the parents thought when they saw that happening? What do you think they thought of Jesus? What do you think they thought of God when they saw that this man took the time to bless their children? It took the disciples, and it takes us quite some time to learn how to search and how to observe, and how to focus. And if you look at the disciples, it did take them a long time to learn to do that. But when you go to the book of Acts, you're going to find out that they learned how to be like Jesus. They looked at others through the Lord's eyes, and they focused on the Father. Remember when Peter and John were coming out of the temple, and the lame man was there, and he was begging for money? Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have I give to you. In the name of Jesus, rise. And then he took him by the hand. We mentioned this last week. Took him by the hand and picked him up. Helped him up. That was looking at that man with Jesus' eyes. When they were appointing the first deacons, why did they appoint the deacons? Because they saw a need. They observed a need. They were focused on the needs of the people. And one of the people that they appointed was Stephen. And Stephen was one who was serving, but he was focusing on God, and he paid for it with his life. Barnabas was a good man, and he gave his money and all this sort of stuff, but when he found Paul, he saw something in Paul that other people didn't see, and he encouraged Paul, and he took him in front of the other folks, and he said, this guy's telling the truth. This guy really has changed. He was an encourager. He was seeing Paul through the eyes that Jesus saw Paul. He wasn't there when Ananias healed him. He wasn't there when he was baptized, but he heard him. He saw him later on, and he realized this is a man that can change the world, that can change people's hearts. Peter, when he heard about Dorcas, went in and healed her. He saw the people who were mourning. He had compassion on them. He saw them through the eyes of Jesus. He saw Cornelius through the eyes of Jesus. Now, he did have to get a little lesson before that. He had to have that dream, with the sheet coming down. But still, he went. And when he went, he taught. And then he baptized. And it's because he was seeing Cornelius through different eyes. Ananias saw Paul through different eyes. Even though he didn't want to go, he went because he knew that he needed to see Saul through different eyes. We will never be able to see what Jesus saw, the way Jesus saw exactly. We will never be able to see what the apostles saw. We will never be able to look in the eyes of Jesus on this side of heaven. We will never be able to follow his gaze as he searches out in a crowd and observes the needs of those people. We will never be able to see like that Roman guard did in Ben-Hur into the eyes of Jesus so that Jesus' eyes can melt our hearts. Or can we? If we look in the words of Jesus in these scriptures, we can see Jesus, can't we? And they can turn our hearts. And they can make our hearts melt just like that Roman guard's, just like Paul's, just like all the other people whose hearts have melted because they've looked into the eyes of Jesus and realized these are eyes that care for me. This is a person who cares for me and loves me and has compassion and mercy and grace, and I need to follow that person. You know, we sang that song, Footprints of Jesus. Have you ever actually sat down and read the words to that song? Next time you sing that song, read those words and ask yourself if you really want to do that. Because those are strong words. And that's what we're talking about here. We need to see people like Jesus saw them. It is a matter of focus. We need to focus on Him and we need to focus on others. So the question I ask at the end of this lesson is, how's your vision? You need those big Coke bottle glasses? Well, some of us do. You need bifocals? You just need to look at people with Jesus' eyes. They're there. They need compassion. And they need Jesus. This morning, if you have a reason, answer, and invitation, we're going to give that to you right now while we stand and sing.